Hello, good morning, good morning. Almost afternoon. So I want to introduce myself. Some of you guys might not know me. I'm Justin Buchter. I'm the intern of Medina Community Church. So a lot of my responsibilities include moving stuff, paperwork, and then working with high schoolers and elementary schoolers. So I love getting up here and speaking. You know, I'm going to school for ministry, and I love this, and I'm very passionate about it, and I thank you guys so much. It's such a blessing to have you guys as a church family and just be able to come up here and talk to you and teach God's word to you. It's just an amazing thing growing up here and being able to do this. So what I want to talk about is naturalism. It's kind of going in the series of the biblical worldview, and naturalism is something that I've grew up, like a lot of young adults have grown up in. It's the fact that our schools, our social media, our society, our news. A lot of you guys have kids that are younger, and they're growing up in the same kind of society. It's very naturalistic, and there's not a whole lot of room for God at all. So in the sermon, I want to cover naturalism. What is it? The impact it has made, and how to interact and dialogue with people who hold this worldview. I have a lot of friends that hold this worldview, hold this atheist, naturalistic worldview, and it's very interesting to get in conversations with them and talk to them about what they believe, and this is just some things that you can use and some, I wouldn't say arguments, but discussion starters you can have with them and how to dialogue with them properly and how we can be able to open them up to the light of Christ. So first thing I want to talk about is what is naturalism? I forget where I get this definition from, but I got it somewhere. Naturalism denies that there are any supernatural or spiritual realities. There's no purely mental substances, and there are no supernatural realities transcendent to the world, or at least we have no good ground for believing that there could be such realities. It is the view that anything that exists is ultimately composed of physical components. So what this is basically saying is we're just chemicals, we're just mere matter in motion. We're nothing more. We were, when the earth was created by, you know, whatever, and we became chemicals, we grew into something, and something, and something, 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 now we're here, and we have no intrinsic value compared to anything else in this world, any other living thing. So, in an easy way, let's say easy way, a way to talk about naturalism and how it's an unattainable, incoherent worldview, there are three M's that usually they can't explain. They can't have a consistent answer on these three M's. Their three M's are mind, morality, and meaning. So we're going to go through mind, morality, and meaning, how they view it, and how the Christian worldview views it, what Christ says about it, and you kind of go from there. So the first one, first M is mind. Naturalism can explain the existence of the brain, but little more. So basically what this is going at is that naturalism itself can explain the physical parts of our body, can explain the mind, how the neurons work, how the parts of the brain, like what they do, like it can explain all those things, but it can't explain much more than that. It can't explain our will and our conscience and things like that. So basically, like our conscience and our minds are an illusion created by the physical processes that are occurring in our material brains. That's what the naturalists, how the naturalists view the world, and how the naturalists view our minds. We're nothing more than just chemicals, and nothing more in our head is happening than just chemicals firing and neurons firing and doing these things on their own. So, you know, next time you're laying in bed next to your significant other or your wife or whatever and say, the chemicals are really flowing right now in my head. No, you know, you love them. Like, you know, like you can't fit that into like a coherent worldview. So the big thing about this is that if you believe in a naturalistic mindset, a naturalistic worldview about the brain, there's no such thing as free will necessarily. Because if we are just chemicals and our heads are just neurons and dominoes falling one after another and they're causing chain reactions and all these things to cause our actions, there's no free will and there's no accountability. So basically, free will and freely reasoned thoughts are simply an illusion in this worldview. The bigger part of this is our consciousness that the Bible is very clear we have, and it's very clear in the world that we see we have a conscience. You know, it's the one telling you not to lie. It's the one telling you you probably shouldn't eat that piece of pizza. It's the one telling you, like, you probably shouldn't, you know, say that mean thing. You know, we have a conscience of basic right and wrong. So God says about our conscience in Romans, or Paul writes in Romans, they show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts. Their consciences also bearing witness, and their thoughts sometimes accusing them, and at other times even defending them. I think it's very, very clear that we have a conscience and we have something that's God-given that we can discern right and wrong with. There are certain things that every human being has an image of, and has an image, a sense of knowing what is wrong. A lot of times it'll be skewed by the fall and our sinful nature, but at the basic level, you can see this, even your children. People who live in cultures that are not very developed, they have a basic sense of what's right and wrong. It's very similar to how we view right and wrong. You know, like, murder is wrong, like, lying is wrong. You know, like, these things we can sense are wrong where there's no, like, you know, because our minds, our conscience tells us so. We can look at the world and say, this is not how it is. That's what our conscience gives us. It gives us the ability to look at the world and say, this is not how it is. And many, even atheists will say that. Even if you talk to naturalists, they'll say that. They'll say, oh, this is not how the world should be. We should be this way, you know. But they have no basis of saying that. They have no basis of saying, hey, this is how the world should be. This is, you know, how we should act when everything's relative to them. Because we're just chemicals going in motion. The next one kind of goes off mind is a morality. This is a big one, and it's something you can see, like, in society a lot. It says, if naturalism is true, morality is nothing more than a matter of opinion. All of us as humans have simply come to embrace those cultural or personal mores that best promote the survival of the species. So this is maybe a little morbid example, but I kind of have to say it. It's very interesting. So if you are a naturalist and you hold to this worldview that there's no higher power, we're all self-autonomous, we're not governed by a transcendent divine standard, what could you say is wrong? Like, could you say, like, the Holocaust is wrong? Could you say that murder was wrong? Could you say, name your awful thing that happened and say, could you say that was wrong? Like, genuinely, if you are a naturalist, could you say, I think that's wrong? That is objectively wrong. You say, subjectively, like, yeah, I think that's wrong. That's not a good thing. But you can't say there's an objective moral truth that says this is wrong as a naturalist. Instead, cultures merely embrace the values and moral principles that work for them and have resulted in the flourishing of their values and moral principles that work for them. Oh, sorry. And resulted in their flourishing of their particular people group. So whatever worked for them, that's their morals. That's what they go by. You know, in the naturalistic worldview, there's no, it's all self-autonomous. You know, we're self-ruling. We want to be the rulers of our own lives. And that's what sin is. You know, we want to be the rulers of our own lives, and we want to live the way we desire. We don't want to be held to a standard or held to a lifestyle that is set by something objectively. So, like, my big thing is I've, like, looked at this and I've talked to people who hold this worldview, and I just see it cannot be lived out consistently. Because so often we talk to my friends who are naturalistic, and they'll say, like, oh, that's wrong. But, like, if that's the case, If naturalism is the case and you hold to that worldview that we're all just chemicals, there's no God, there's no objective standard, you can't say that, like, one group of evolved humans can say to another group of evolved humans that they are truly right or wrong. You can say to them, like, I really don't think you're right. You know, I think that's wrong, but you can't say that is wrong. And I think so often as we look at the world, we can watch the news, turn on the TV for 5 minutes and say that is wrong. Like, that is awful, that is wrong, that should not be happening. And that's something that naturalists can't do. They think they can. They borrow from a Christian worldview. They borrow from any religious worldview that has a higher standard and apply it to their own worldview. But when you look at it deeper, you understand that naturalism cannot hold to that worldview if they want to be consistent. And looking at, like, what God says, the whole Bible is filled with, like, moral laws, and, you know, it's been since the beginning of time. God has told us what to do and what not to do, and those are all for our protection. They're all for are good, you know. And you look at what Jesus says in Luke, but to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, and pray for those who mistreat you. That's something that's very clear. Jesus says is that we have this morality, we have this way of life we need to be living, these values and this conscience that we need to be following, and this objective standard we need to be following. The third M is meaning. So this is a big one. I see this like working with the high schoolers and living in a house with a bunch of college students, even that are Christians, and just being around the college atmosphere. So many people struggle with what their meaning is. They struggle with where they want to go in life, what they want to do, you know, who to date, where to go, you know, all those things. They're like, what is my meaning? Like, what's my purpose? And this is something that really hits close home to me, for me, because like going through high school, starting out at college, you know, switching majors twice before this is my third major actually, is ministry. So I've switched majors twice, and just like the first two majors, I was just trying to understand like what is my purpose, where I'm supposed to go, and nothing felt right. You know, I was a Christian, but I wasn't following my faith. I was not living the way I was supposed to be, and I was pursuing all these things I thought would give me meaning and give me purpose. And they didn't. They are all empty. And this is the big one that I think leads people down to depression, to anxiety, to these mental illnesses, because they're so focused on like, oh, I need to like find my purpose. I need to find my meaning. And when they finally get to that purpose or that meaning they thought would fulfill them, it's not what they wanted. It's not what they expected. And it's something that they make up another meaning or another purpose to pursue. So basically, if naturalism is true, life's meaning and purposes are simply in the eye of the beholder. So I think a lot of you guys have kids or have raised kids. So this is just like an example of someone, if you were a naturalist parent, right? So this is an example. You're talking to your son. And your son tells you he thinks that his meaning is found in playing video games 10 hours a day. I so know some of your kids play video games 10 hours a day. I talk to them on Sunday nights. So I know some of them actually do that. But if they say, they're like, hey, like my meaning is this. You can't tell me that's objectively wrong. You can tell them, like, as your parent, I think that's wrong, or as your parent, I don't think that's subjective. You can be subjective about it, but ultimately, if there's no transcendent author of life, you can't be like, oh, that's wrong, which we can all say. Like, if I have kids one day and I see them playing video games 10 hours a day, I'm like, that is wrong. You need to do something. You know, I know what your purpose in life is. That's not it. You know, and like we can all say that. But if it's in the eye of the beholder, you can't say that. You as a naturalist parent, you just be like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's your purpose. Go ahead, do it. Like, that's how you live that out consistently. So basically, each of us gets to write our own script. While you may believe your son has missed the point of his existence and has forfeited the opportunity to experience life fully, really don't have any objective authority upon which to ground an alternative. As a naturalist, you are inventing your own meaning as well, purpose and significance. Your purpose and significance are nothing more than opinion and personal preference. And that's just heartbreaking. And I see that in my high schoolers. I see that in, you know, even my friends at my campus ministry. Like, I see that. And the Bible is so clear on what your purpose is. It's obvious. Jesus was very clear. And I've seen so many people go down the path of searching for a different meaning, of going to, you know, whatever it is. And I've been there, and it always ends up empty. It never ends up fulfilling anyone. The only time I've ever seen someone can be fulfilled and just experiencing pure joy is when they have came to the truth of Jesus Christ. And that's what our meaning is. And Paul writes about it in 2 Corinthians, where he says, all this is from God who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciled the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them, as he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. That's an awesome purpose. Like, I don't know about you, but like that just like gets me amped, gets me excited that like God like doesn't need to use us at all to like serve him. He doesn't need us to evangelize. He doesn't need us to do anything. He could do it any other way, but he's chosen to use us to give us a meaning and a purpose. An example of this that you could like use to like a metaphor, when you tell your kids to clean their room, or when you were telling your kids to clean their room, you could have cleaned their room a lot faster than they could have, and probably a lot better. Like, remember, my mom would clean it and be done in 5 minutes, but when I cleaned it, it took a couple hours. But The thing is, like, there's no growth. There's no purpose. There's no meaning in that. You know, God could take it and just be like, I'm going to do this, you know. But he's given us the message of reconciliation. He's made us Christ's ambassadors. He's making his appeal through us. Like, that's crazy. Like, I'm a sinner and a broken vessel, and God makes his appeal through me. Like, that is amazing. And that's our purpose. That's our meaning. And that is so much better and so much more fulfilling than anything else in this world. So basically, God's very clear. We have a purpose, we have morality, we have a conscience, and it's just very clear that what God says, it's in direct, naturalism is in direct opposition of that. So this is a quote I want to read to kind of sum this up from Richard Dawkins. I'm not sure if you guys know who Richard Dawkins is. He's a very outspoken atheist. He's a famous evolutionary biologist. He wrote the book, The God Delusion, a very famous atheistic book kind of talking about how God is a delusion. This is him talking about meaning. This is a tweet he had in like 2016. And it struck me when I read it. It kind of actually just like baffled me. This is how like some naturalists view the world. And he's like kind of commenting on the topic of abortion. I'm not trying to get political. I'm just trying to put in context what he was saying, what he was talking about. He said, with respect to those meanings of human that are relevant to the morality of abortion, any fetus is less human than an adult pig. So he's looking at the biology of it, and he's saying, you are not human. You know, your value is not even near, you know, you're not, your value is not any more than any animal. That's kind of like what he's saying, and that was like, that's crazy to me that people actually hold that worldview and that our value is, to them, we're just animals. You know, we're just matter and motion. We're nothing more. I just think that quote says 1,000 words about the naturalistic mindset, and it breaks my heart that so many people hold that worldview without even understanding what they're believing in. And when you really dive deep into it, you can see the incoherence of naturalism and how it just doesn't add up and how it doesn't work and how it just falls short. So, like, growing up in a naturalistic society, for me, like, I went, you know, going to public school, I went to private school for high school, but you can see this in public school, they don't teach God anymore. They're not allowed. There's no room for it. Like, it's secular, it's naturalist. Like, there's no room for it. And that's what leads these people to try to find their own purpose, find their own meaning, and hold these worldviews that don't add up. So I'm going to look at its effect on society. And one of the main effects that I've seen, I'm going to go through two. The first one, something Pastor Doug's been talking a lot about, is how there's a philosophy of life that a lot of people hold to, the eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die. A lot of naturalists will hold to this worldview because they're trying to fulfill their own purpose. They're trying to find their own meaning in eating, drinking, whatever. And just because we're going to die eventually, we're going to not exist, so we might as well live our life while we have it. And that's just very common. I see that. I live on a college campus, and it's Thursday nights are crazy, Friday nights are crazy, Saturday nights are crazy, just driving around and seeing everything that's going on, and, you know, all the sirens, and I don't know, I live in Akron, right by the campus, and that's just so common. I see so many people just throwing their lives away almost just to do these things and to pursue these things, pursue these parties, pursue these, you know, and that's not where your purpose, not where your meaning is. That will leave you unfulfilled. The second and I think more important thing that I've seen naturalism have its effect on society is postmodern thinking. I'm not sure if you guys have learned about postmodernism, but it's basically saying like every truth is relative. There's no objective truth, kind of like what I talked about with morality either. But I think this can be seen so often in the news, social media, in day-to-day life, you know. You probably have those coworkers or those people you talk to where it's like, you can't tell me your truth. Like, that's your truth. That's not my truth. You know, I can believe what I want to believe. There's no standard for me. It's just my truth. Your truth can apply to you. That's just not livable. That's just not, you can't say like some truths are, you know, truth, and that just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. You can't live that out. And it's in this environment in schools, and it's offensive to disagree with someone's life choices. Like, it's very hard for me, for example, I was, live right by the campus, Akron's campus, and sometimes there'll be, like, street preachers that will come out and start preaching on Akron's campus, and since I don't go there, I go to school online, I always tell my friends, if they see them, just text me, I want to go talk to them, to kind of pick their brain. You know, I enjoy talking about ministry, and just, you know, I love it, and I just want to see, like, where they're at, you know, what their mindset is, and stuff, and I there's one time my friend texted me and she said, this guy's here. And I was like, okay, I'll go talk to him. Great guy, amazing guy, awesome story, and just loves Jesus. But I'm sitting there talking to him about, you know, his ministry and everything he's doing. And this girl comes up to us and just starts asking all these questions. And as soon as he says anything that's a little bit disagreeing with her, a little bit, she like freaked, she like got super upset. So very angry, started yelling and, you know, calling us names and calling him names and doing all this stuff. And I'm sitting there watching this, like, he didn't even say anything that was like, he just disagreed with your worldview. Like, why does that get you so amped up? You know what I mean? So many people disagree with our worldview, and I don't start yelling at them when they say, I don't believe in this. But that's just the environment that you see in workplaces and schools and in just day-to-day life. There's just very little cordial discussion anymore. With people from both sides of the spectrum, it's important to learn how we can dialogue with these people of this postmodern naturalistic mindset, because so often we can't even talk. We can't even have a cordial discussion to see where we can progress, what we can do, where we can agree. You know, we can't even do that anymore, because as soon as you bring it up and you disagree with them at all, the conversation stops. You know, people say don't talk about religion and politics at a party. Now you can't talk about religion and politics anywhere. So it's something that it's good to discuss those things, and it's good to talk about those things and see where other people are at, and, you know, understand that people have other views than you. But you can't. People get so offended nowadays when you hold to a different worldview. And this is seen all throughout Paul's ministry and all throughout the Bible. You can go back to the prophets. You can go back, you know, to Genesis. We know when, you know, you just like all these people who came and said, like, this is, don't do this. You know, this is not good. And this is the truth, you know. And you can see this in one of my favorite passages in the Bible, chapters in the Bible, Acts 17. Paul is in Athens, and he's talking to a lot of, like, the religious leaders or, like, the philosophical leaders at the time, and he's talking to them about their faith and their religion and, like, what they believe. And the cool thing about this is that Paul meets them right where they're at and discusses and talks to them and tries to find common ground in order to implant the gospel. So I'm going to read through. This is Acts 17, 22 through 28. And it said, then Paul stood up in the meeting of Areopagus and said, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with an inscription to an unknown god. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. So I'm going to stop right there and kind of comment on that. Kind of going back to, like, the naturalistic mindset, a lot of people don't even understand what they believe in, I guess. You can see this in Christians, too, and any people of any worldview. A lot of them don't understand, like, what are our core beliefs? Like, why do I believe this? You know, is it just because this is where I was raised? This is because I don't, you know, agree with something over here? It's like, why do you believe what you believe? And that's kind of what Paul's talking about. He's like, you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. You're ignorant of your own worldview. You don't even know what you're doing. Like, you're not consistent. And then continuing, it said, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations. They should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. My favorite part about this passage is where Paul, the end of it, where he says, as some of your own poets said, we are his offspring. We are called to meet them where they're at and talk to them where they're at. And that's exactly what Paul did throughout his whole entire ministry. He brought in their own gods, their own prophets, their own literature. And he's like, look, like, this is what you guys believe. And there's some similarities here, like, and trying to use that to push the gospel and push them towards Christ. And I think this sums up a lot of how we need to interact with people of a different mindset, different worldview, especially a naturalistic worldview. We're called to love them, and that's the bottom line. We're called to love them, and we're called to point them towards Christ. You know, so often we think if we have this, you know, I talked about, like, an argument you can use against it, but ultimately that's not what's going to lead them to Christ. I've had that discussion with naturalists and people who don't believe, and it doesn't do anything, really. It makes them think, and it makes them consider, and, like, you know, do a little like digging into their worldview, but ultimately the people I've seen come to Christ, even in my own life, in my own testimony, I didn't come to Christ until Christ got me, you know, until Christ reached me, until I opened my heart and saw the love that other Christians had for me and the love that Christ had for me in the cross. That's what led me to Christ. So when we think about these people, our heart just needs to break for them and go out for them to know they're living into this worldview that is just, it's sad. And, you know, that's what evangelization is. That's what Jesus did. His heart broke. You know, Jesus, the Bible says, like, Jesus had compassion. He looked over. He had compassion because he saw, like, the emptiness of the worldview. And as our world is falling away from the Judeo-Christian ethic, we need to be the light that brings people back, not by words alone, but by actions. You know, before the service, Brad's like, you need to add this in. And he said that in Antioch, the first time Christians were called Christians, it wasn't because of what they were saying, it was because of how they were acting. They were acting like Christ. They were acting in the love that Christ had for other people. That's what makes us Christians. It doesn't, you know, and that's how we need to dialogue. That's how we need to interact with them. That's how we need to love them. That's how we need to point them towards Christ. You know, those discussions are good and they're fruitful and they make people think, and it's interesting to see where they're coming from and to understand, but ultimately, those discussions are not what lead people to Christ. What leads people to Christ is our love in the cross. That's what leads people to Christ. And when you're talking about dialoguing with them, we shouldn't focus so much on some tight-woven philosophical argument. You know, there are those, and they're good, and they're fruitful, and I encourage people to look into it, but ultimately, what brings people to Christ, like I've said, is love. And that's the dialogue. It's saying, like, you know, I love you. I care about you. You know, I'm not saying this because I want to impose my worldview on you. You know, I'm saying this because you need Jesus. I'm saying this because you're a sinner that Christ died for and you need grace. That's why we're saying it. That's why you're supposed to be saying it. It's ultimately, we need to lead them to say that, let them know salvation comes through Christ, and our duty is just to show them and lead them in that direction. Jesus calls us the salt and the light of the earth. We're supposed to preserve the earth. We're supposed to be the lighthouse that points towards the glory of Christ and who he is. And I get so caught up, and when I'm talking to my friends who hold this view, I get so caught up and try to, like, destroy all their arguments. Or I'm like, I'm going to prove you wrong. You know, I'm going to have a better argument than you can. But then I just remember, like, that's not what Jesus did. Jesus had discussions, yes, and he talked to the Pharisees, and he talked to people with other worldviews. But the people that came to him, the people that came to him in faith, he loved them and healed them and showed and just empathized with them. He was there. And it's not about a dialogue. It's about an action. And that's how we should live to help these people and to help anyone and help each other. And that's what Jesus did, and we should emulate it, just as Paul said. That's all I got to say, and I'm going to wrap up in prayer. Hey, God. You know, just like that song said, help us build our life upon your love. God, you are so, so, so good. God, you are love. Just please continue to work in our hearts. Continue to show us who you are and lead us in your love to those around us, God. It's not about our arguments. It's not about what we say. It's about how we act. It's about how we show them who you are. We are your ambassadors. Let us act like it. Move in our hearts. Convict us. Show us where we need to go, and help us be bold in our faith to share it and to show that love and not to be afraid, God. You cast out fear, God. And just let us preach about your grace and evangelize about your grace and say you are saved by grace through faith because of your love and because of your Son. Thank you for coming on the cross. Thank you for shedding your blood. Thank you for forgiving us, God. We don't deserve anything you've given to us. You are so, so, so good, God, and just thank you for this church community and who you are. In your name we pray. Amen.